go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, looky here. It's the 28th day of July, 2014. Where'd July go? It went where the candle flame goes. Anyway, we are rolling downhill toward the end of the month of July and the beginning of August. And, of course, August marks the beginning of the end of summer. And, by God, I can almost already hear the nasty little propane cylinders clanking around as I anticipate winter. Hey! But no, we're almost done with July, and a little program note, on the 31st, either on the 30th or the 31st, there's a pretty good chance I won't be here. That is occasioned by medical necessity. I have to take Agnes to the doctor down in Charleston. When you live in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone, you do a lot of doctoring. You just do. I, for instance... Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Head On Radio, RadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find easy, quick, and by all means free access to the Head On RadioNetwork.com chat room, where you'll find the pop-up player for PC listening, where you will find, yes, the PayPal button. The PayPal button that keeps all of this going and keeps everything on the air. And I'll let you know this evening, right now, that Dr. John has kindly provided the Goodbye July challenge for this Monday evening. Dr. John has put $50 on the table that he will match when other people in any combination kick in $50. So, you know, up to $50, your 5 becomes 10, 10, 20, 20, 30, and so forth, up to $50 via the PayPal button, and or the traditional mailbox, the address for which is under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You'll see it there at the bottom of the page. And that will get us two-thirds of the way toward our evening's fundraising goal, which is $150 per evening. By any metric, pretty cheap, considering all in all. So thank you very kindly, Dr. John, for getting us started. Hopefully that will get met rapidly, or with alacrity, shall we say, if we're going to use our fancy words. And we'll be, and I'll stop talking about all of this. Let's see now. No, what I was going to say is that I, too, am dealing, well, we all, I've talked from time to time about some of the squirrely business with my innards. So sometime next month, I have to, there's really no delicate way to put this, I have to deep throat a garden hose and let them look at my gullet. And so I went over to Summersville today to do the pre-screening for that. And, you know, it's just icky even contemplating all of this stuff, but better to have it than not have it, right? Yeah. Never mind the fact that, our buddy Harry pointed out, it was a West Virginian who declared that if he had to pay $21 per year or a $95 penalty, that he would go out of business in his carpet laying business. We talked about that. It's the split in the circuits that now exist as the godforsaken, miserable, soulless, brainless, dead from the neck up teabaggers go about the business of trying to take away the health care that people in West Virginia now have because we are a part of one of those federal exchanges. So I go in, I walk in the doctor's office, and I don't have time just to sort of fool around with this stuff anymore. Not that I'm running around screaming at anyone, but if you are a practitioner in the medical profession and you actually care about your patients, you should not have any news channel on in your waiting room at all. I recommend, if you must run a television in your waiting room, the Weather Channel. Everybody likes it. There's not a lot to argue about there. Well, I mean, there's climate change and everything, but you get my meaning. But above all, the one thing that should not be on your television in your waiting room, if you are a physician, is Fox. Jesus, the stupid. Why not just have do-it-yourself trepanning going on in your waiting room, too? Just before I started the program, just before coming on air this evening, I ran across a story. Who knew that more than half of the things, there it is, yep, many of you know mine and Malloy's good friend Pterodactyl. Well, Tara runs a site called RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, and I found this via RepublicanDirtyTricks.com. Yes, indeed. Over half of all statements made on Fox News are demonstrably, actually false. Now, if you're a listener to this program for any length of time, much at all, you know that's so, but it's kind of interesting when you see people who deal with statistics and science and, you know, facts saying, yeah, they, wow, you're a news channel and you can't cross the 50% line for truthiness. Let's see. MSNBC gives correct facts more than half the time, so too does CNN. Fox, but anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. But you got a bunch of people sitting in a waiting room for a physician who uses knives on them. And you're going to put them at ease by letting them watch somebody stand on their head and scream about Benghazi? Is this something? And because this does kind of fit in with the general theme of the evening's program, to wit, More in Monday. Because it causes me no small amount of consternation. If I'm going to trust my well-being to a person with a knife in his hand, and this the pronoun is correct because in this particular instance all the physicians are he, then I would like to be certain that I'm not dealing with some raging ideologue. And if the doctor in question is himself insisting that the TV be tuned to Fox News, then I am dealing with an ideologue. On the other hand, if it's the office manager or the business manager or whatever in the office, the doc needs to take the business manager aside and say, listen, let's not stress out the patients. Okay? Yeah. Weather Channel, it is. But it is Moran Monday on the horn. And by the way, thanks to those of you who kindly inquired after the long weekend that we had here. Well, agreed, Lottie noting in the chat room. Bob, just because a guy has an MD doesn't mean he's not an idiot. I worked with loads of them. Oh, I know. That's why all the stupid doctors apparently become members of Congress, because they're almost all Republicans. So anyway, thanks to everybody who inquired after our long weekend. I hadn't had one of those in a very, very long time, and I don't do it easily, but it's very good for me to occasionally be compelled to just walk away and not think of any of the stupidity out in the world and not worry about any. And you know what? For 2.5 days, I did absolutely that. I consciously left all of this mostly behind. I don't mean y'all. I mean the general chaos and misery of life on this here little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Because it's, in a way, it's kind of difficult to get all wrought up and focused on that kind of misery when you've got a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old who are all screaming, "Opa, opa, pay attention to me." It was nice. It was really nice. My sister and my brother-in-law came up from South Alabama, and we had 2 delightful days of family and feasting. My brother-in-law, if he wished, could just chuck everything and go into the ribs business and probably become a multimillionaire. Oh, he's good. I mean, good, good. And it was just it was wonderful. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of laughter, a lot of carrying on. In the background, some significant worry. But we all just kind of pretended it wasn't there. And enjoyed our time together. So thank you for your patience in indulging me in being absent and away from the microphone for 2 days. Generally speaking, I don't like being away from the microphone because usually I'm not in a situation where I can put everything to the side. Instead, usually if I'm away from the microphone, it's because something awful has happened to the internet or the phones or blah, 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 blah. And so I'm sitting here stewing in my own juices while not being able to do anything or say anything about it. Yeah, M. Brandt in the chat room noting, glad you got to reset. That's exactly what it was. It was a reset. So I'm kind of refreshed and in fairly good spirits. And that's a good thing, because after all, this is the beginning of the week, and the beginning of the week around here means that we jump right in and start considering real live, honest to God, Morans. And we got a couple of genuine Lulus to get us started. Oh yes we do. let's do this right.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, hurry, 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 step right up, it's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeedy, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Indeed, indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can peer behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas and listen to, see, hear, behold, witness right-wing Morans, Repiglican Morans, John Bircher Morans, Deather, Booger Eater, Tenther Morans, Morans, one and all. Visitors to the Moran Monday tent are advised to keep handbags, backpacks, and small children close in hand, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Goodness me. My particular favorite, and one that I mentioned on social media earlier this week, it comes out of Washington, D.C., of course. I mean, this is just... You don't get these very often. This is a live one. This is like bronzed baby shoes, okay? This is one for the mantelpiece. So this past Thursday, while I was putting everything aside, I managed not to put everything aside, obviously. I kind of lied, didn't I? Oops, my apologies. This past Thursday, they had a little hearing in the Congress, and the purpose of said hearing was to talk about foreign affairs, and in particular, foreign affairs from the standpoint of the Department of State, which is tasked with dealing with America's foreign policy. It was the Asia-Pacific Subcommittee, and there were State Department officials there. Enter Teabagger. In this particular instance, Teabagger freshman representing Kurt Clawson. All weekend I've been trying to make myself remember this guy's name. It's Kurt Clawson, not Cletus Clawson. Cletus seems ever so much more apropos, really. So the witnesses get introduced, and the witnesses by the chair of the subcommittee, and they promise to do things like not lie to Congress and that kind of stuff. And representing Cletus Clawson, Kurt, sorry. Well, he's only been on the job for a week or so because he's a noob. He only became a member of the House of Representatives because, his predecessor in office, Trey Radel, who was also a Repiglican, resigned from Congress after he got caught with some Bolivian marching powder. Nose candy. Cocaine.
Now, representing Cletus Clawson, or Kurt, is a some sort of an executive from an aluminum wheel company. And, of course, in America, well, by golly, if you're a job creator, that means that you're probably a genius. Because you have to be a genius to get rich. See, it's a sort of modern-day Randian economic Calvinism. If you're rich, you must be smart. No matter how many particular instances of evidence to the contrary there are. Well, Bob, quit talking about it. Let's go to the tail of the tape. Asia and Pacific Subcommittee, Congress of the United States, and comments from representing Cletus Clawson, I mean Kurt. Oh, God.
I am familiar with your country. I love your country. And I understand the complications of so many languages and so many cultures and so many histories all rolled up in one.
Whose country? Oh, maybe I neglected to give an important piece of information. The two officials from the United States Department of State who were testifying before the Asia and Pacific Subcommittee were a couple of American citizens by the name of Nisha Biswal and Arun Kumar. You know, the melting pot. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Oh, wait, we're dremeling that all off of that tablet, aren't we? Well, anyway, somehow or another, their folks managed to get to America. And Americans, Nisha Biswal and Arun Kumar are. As noted, they were introduced by name as being from the U.S. Department of State. And again, enter Moran. God, if only we had a few more folks who could record stuff. Wouldn't Enter Moran be a great parody of Enter Sandman? Just say it.
I am familiar with your country. I love your country. And I understand the complications of so many languages and so many cultures and so many histories all rolled up in one. So just as your capital is welcome here to produce good-paying jobs in the U.S., I'd like our capital to be welcome there, and there to be freedom of capital so that both sides are on the same territory. And I ask cooperation and commitment and priority from your government in so doing. Can I have that?
You know, when they have these hearings, there's always a staffer sitting in the background to, I don't know, to send tweets or what, you know, do the bidding of the. And so there's this one, and Washington, D.C. is run by kids between the ages of 19 and 23. I don't know if this is representing Kurt Clawson's staffer or just somebody who's sitting behind him to make sure that he doesn't start reciting Lewis Carroll lyrics, which probably would have been far better than this. But this kid is going to go far in government because he, doesn't crack a smile during all of this. Now, here's a little old white-haired man named Arun Kumar who has probably been here for a while. And a lovely young woman, Nisha Biswal. I'm surprised with this guy being a teabagger that he didn't speak louder. Hello! We are glad to have you in America. Welcome to freedom. Do you have a gun yet? You cannot have freedom without a gun. No. And by the way, by capital, he's not talking about New Delhi. He's talking about capital as in das Kapital, as in money. We like to have your money in America. We also like to have money in your country. I have remarked in the past on the fact that diplomacy, throughout the history of the United States, diplomacy and foreign affairs have never really been our strong suit. But I would like to say that perhaps we have turned a corner, because neither Nisha Biswal nor the Honorable Arun Kumar came over across their witnessing table and strangled Representative Clausen, teabagger, booger eater, 33rd degree booger eater. I mean, really. Welcome to America! I gotta hear it again. I'm sorry. This is... I just gotta.
I think...
I am familiar with your country. I love your country. And I understand the complications of so many languages and so many cultures and so many histories all rolled up in one.
On the other hand, he probably wants everybody to speak English over here. So many cultures, so much history, rolled up into one, like a big pumpkin roll of culture history. Mm-hmm. Yes. I like your country. Wait, you know what? I know I've already played it, but I think this is just ever so useful in a moment like this.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yes, and so are the people who sent him to Congress. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Bob, you have to understand that these folks ain't white. They ain't even old-timey. Old-timey. Old-timey Indians. Okay, I get it, Ron. We're going to take our victories where we can find them. He didn't ask them whether they were Navajo or Cherokee. You're right, Ron. It could have been worse or better, depending on how one looks at this situation. God almighty! Oh, anyway, remember, all that history, all that culture rolled up into one. Culture rolling. I think they played that at the Scottish Highland Games, too, or something, right? No, that's Loghaven. Well, whatever.
So just as your capital is welcome here to produce good-paying jobs in the U.S., I'd like our capital to be welcomed there, and there to be freedom of capital.
And granted, there's some pauses here, and we're only dealing with audio, and you can't see what I'm seeing. But no, neither Mr. Kumar nor Ms. Biswal came across the table. No, it was more in the way of them looking at him like, I don't know, an exhibit in a freak show, which, this being Morian Monday, he is.
So that both sides are on the same territory. And I ask cooperation and commitment and priority from your government in so doing.
The two witnesses' wry little grins are precious.
Can I have that?
And he squints at him a little bit. And then he offers him his campaigning smile.
I think your question is to the Indian government, and we certainly share your sentiments, and we certainly will advocate that on behalf of the U.S.
Of course.
Wait a minute. She don't sound like... What?
Okay. Let's see some progress.
Now, that's the video that's available. But there was more. Oh, yes, there was more. I mentioned the subcommittee chairman who introduced these two witnesses by name and by title and by affiliation. That would be Repiglick and Steve Chabot. Repiglick and from Ohio, Stan. And in introducing Representative Clausen, he said, "Our newest member of this committee, Kurt Clausen, speaks four languages and all kinds of other great stuff. And all kinds of mean, nasty things, right?" Oh. You understand now why this had to be at the top of the More In Monday list, right? Not only was there this exchange, we would be here all night with me going back and playing it again and going back and playing it again, and you guys would be going through hockey pucks like donuts. If I only had the audio where he, and I'm not kidding, really, he also made a point to explain to Ms. Bishwal and Mr. Kumar that he really loves Bollywood movies. Mm-hmm. And went on and on and on about how much he knows about Inja. Now, an Inja, Sonny Klon, where I used to spend my time, it's a seven of Her Majesty the Queen. Of all them black-faced crew, the finest man I knew was our regimental bistie, Gunga Dean. I'll jewelry you this moment. You put some jewelry in it or I'll marrow you this minute if you don't fill up my canteen, Gunga Dean. Yeah. No, really. Asa in Vancouver pointing out, "Oh, come on, Brother Bob. We all know that Brother Representing Clausen was taken out of context here." No, he's just crawling with context. Welcome to America. And let me just say, I understand why y'all like them Bollywood movies so really much, because I do too. Yes, I do. Nothing like them. Nothing. Golly, Ned. Hey, good news. Thank you very much to Cameron. Cameron says, "Sorry, I can't give much." No, everything is much. Believe you me, everything is much. There's no such thing as a little contribution or a small contribution, because they all add up and have been adding up for these many years to keep this effort on the air. So thank you very kindly, Cameron. Cameron says, "Thanks to the Horn and other progressive liberal folks, I'm a and rat." Oh, okay, let me see. All right, hold on. Well, you ran out of letters, Cameron, but he does say, "Thanks to the Horn and other true progressive liberals, I'm not terribly depressed, as I understand that a lot of it is capitalist economics, and not my fault." Yes, it does help, Cameron. Cameron says, "I hope this helps, and I hope others contribute as well. Please continue to do what you do." We will, as long as y'all can continue to do what y'all do and keep this all going, we will. So I am proud to announce that between Cameron and Sal, thank you, Sal, You're there day in and day out. Thank you so very much. Between Cameron and Sal, we now have only $35 to go to meet Dr. John's Goodbye July challenge this evening. So that's wonderful. Hopefully that'll happen, you know, who knows? It could happen in the next 5 minutes or the next 15 or the next 25. It can happen. Jeremy noting by message, this reminds me of the movie Rush Hour and the park where Chris Tucker says to Jackie Chan loudly, "Can you understand the words coming out of my mouth?" To which Jackie Chan's character simply says, "Yes! Yes." But we're not done. No. We're not done. It's More and Monday, and they line right up over More and Monday. Especially in the instances where I've got a couple of days of catching up to do. And for this, this is a little bit like cheating, but not really. We get a couple of these, by the way. We have talked in the past about former chief of the Southern Baptist Convention, the SoBapCon, Dick Land. Dick Land got himself a gig as a fill-in host for Tony
Norman,
yes, Mother Bates, Perkins over to the Washington Watch, Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council. And when you get your big fill-in gig, you want to make sure that you say something that makes people remember you. Now, you might ask yourself, why is he doing that? Well, Dick Land, it turns out, had to stop being the chief of the SoBapCons when he got busted for plagiarism. And he didn't just get busted for plagiarism, he got busted for plagiarism as well as doing some dog whistling. And this goes back a couple of years to 2012. And Dick Land said that race hustlers were using the slaughter of Trayvon Martin to gin up the black vote. Yeah, that Dick Land. But here's the fun part. It turns out that Dick Land couldn't even use his own dog whistle. He had to have someone else's. So, like a fellow who is probably one of his favorite members of the new United States government, you know, Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, Dick Land actually plagiarized from the Washington Times, and the Washington Examiner. He plagiarized his sleazy remarks about Trayvon Martin. Now, if you're a right-winger, if you're a birther, a tenther, a deather, a booger-eater, a bircher, a libertarian, what have you, that being busted for that will not keep you from getting, say, a fill-in slot for Tony,
yes, Mother Bates,
Perkins, on Washington Watch. And apparently Dick Land, who is supposedly a deeply religious fellow thinking about the salvation of all of our souls, Dick Land Well, turns out when he gets behind the microphone, he's thinking about other stuff.
Movies and books like Denise D'Souza's book, America, are so important because if you're younger than 40 and you've been taught in the public schools, you have not learned the real story of America. You have been taught a lie about America as a colonial power, as a rapacious power. As Denise points out, we ended slavery. We didn't bring slavery to North America. Slavery was there. The Native Americans were enslaving each other before we got here. Eventually, we ended slavery. We have been a civilizing influence in the world. Movies and books like Denise D'Souza's book.
Yeah, I don't know if they're listening right now, but if our buddy Angry and our buddy Luda are listening, they have just probably thrown a shoe at the speaker. Did you hear that? Apparently, the lesson that Dickland learned is that if you want to use somebody else's words, even if they're nasty, hateful, filthy words, you say, as Denise D'Souza has said. Denise D'Souza. You know, the guy who was busted for election fraud and campaign finance fraud, and who was the president of a crappy little religious fundamentalist school in New York City until he got busted in flagrante delicto, which is Latin for in bed with somebody he wasn't married to. Yeah, that Denise D'Souza. Denise. But no, you got that, right? That's why this is Moran Monday. Dickland citing Denise D'Souza. Says that slavery was just running all over the place in America before the white folks even got here. Mm-hmm. Funny, I miss those passages about all the happy spiritual singing slaves chopping cotton in the Chickasaw cotton patch, or the Cherokee cotton patch, or the Choctaw cotton patch, or the Muskogee cotton patch. I missed the part about the cotton patch. Oh, for pity's sakes. Americans ended slavery. We didn't bring slavery to North America. Well, at least there's a kernel of truth in that. Americans did end slavery. Meanwhile, a bunch of traitors fought a war to try to preserve it. Hint, the geographic location of the traitors who fought a war to try to preserve slavery is enshrined in the first word in the name of the Southern Baptist Convention. How do you even begin to deconstruct something like this? I think he's suggesting that Denise D'Souza says that white folks learned about how to do slavery from Native American populations. Excuse me? That African slaves never would have been brought to the American continents had it not been for the fact that Lily White, Simon Simple, Simon Pure white people from Europe got here and said, what are they doing there? Well, the translator says it's called slavery. Well, I've never heard of that. Got to be careful watching this program, Sergi. There's a reason we talk about hockey pucks and duct tape. Sergi writing, I just did one hell of a spit take upon hearing that clip. This time it was Green Apple Kool-Aid. Signed, Sergi, the historical revisionism at Burns, Kyle. I did it. Sorry, Jeremy. Oh, my. OMFG, Bob. Duct tape and puck warning next time.
I thought we took the duct tape and the hockey puck as read on Moran Monday.
I mean, at some point in time, some personal responsibility has got to attach here. You all know what Moran Monday is about. You know what we're dealing with, the birthers, the deathers, the tenthers, the booger eaters, the libertarians, the John Birchers, the Repiglickens. You know. Just keep it handy. I mean, you're getting ready to listen to the program, and maybe you keep one in the car for listening on, when you're listening on your mobile device, your iThis or your Smart That with your TuneIn app or your Stitcher app. Yeah. You keep some duct tape and a hockey puck in the car. Keep a roll and a puck in a backpack for when you're just out on Shanks Mares, and keep one there by the PC. You know you're gonna want it. You might recall that Denise D'Souza, Denise. No, he did. Now listen.
America are so important because if you're younger than 40 and you've been taught in the public schools, you have not learned the real story of America. You have been taught a lie about America as a colonial power, as a rapacious power.
Which we are and have been. The degree to which the degree to which we are or have been, that part is suitable for discussion. That we have done awful things is not. Not at all. But I guess he's Dick Land has read Denise's book or maybe he went to see the movie, because that's playing as well. America, imagine a world without her. Her? Really? Her? We're still using those antiquated 19th century pronouns, and ships and countries have to be female? Hey. So I have not, and I am not going to, read Denise's book or see his stupid movie, because I've studied actual history. And so have you. And we know what the origins of slavery are in this country. We know that, for instance, that the origins of slavery in this country don't even begin in this hemisphere. It begins in the islands off of the African mainland. And then spreads, thanks to folks like the Dutch and the Portuguese. There's a great overview of the advent of slavery in Charles C. Mann's book, 1493. I highly recommend it. But see, if you're Dick Land, you can't go into nuance and detail, because you're dealing with an audience for whom nuance and detail are scary foreign things that might turn you queer. Oh, and by the way, let's do a quick flashback to the end of last month and check out Dick Land on, because see, he's he's Dick Land is all upset about Tegay. This won't take long. Yes, hockey puck. Yes, duct tape.
You have been taught a lot about colonial power as a rapacious power.
The vice president's pronouncements. Theological or total. Here we go. Now, what this is about? What this is about is it goes back, like I said, to late June of this year, last month. When Vice President Joe Biden said that the fight for gay rights is the civil rights issue of our day. This did not sit well with Dick Land.
Dr. Land, let's begin with you. What do you make of the Vice President's pronouncements, theological or totally political?
Well, simplistic, for starters, and wrong-headed, secondly, and a total conflation of what he's calling cultural and social values with what are very often deeply held religious convictions. Religious convictions about homosexuality are not cultural values. They're deeply held religious convictions. And... this speaking as a Christian,
I question that, but we'll let him call himself a Christian. I guess we have to.
Called upon by my Savior to treat everyone humanely, but I'm also called upon to uphold biblical standards of morality and the Bible.
You know, it's interesting he would bring. Because there were standards of morality, and it is discussed at Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, discusses this at length in the parable of the Good Samaritan. A man had been beaten and robbed along the roadway and left to die. The rabbi walked by and said, "Yea, verily, I may not touch this man as I will become unclean." And a number of other nose-in-the-air types did the same. Until a Samaritan, and by Samaritan we understood within the cultural argot in which Yeshua was working, he meant someone who was deemed to be of deeply distasteful social and cultural background and generally shunned by society anyway. The Samaritan comes along and sees the guy bleeding and laying near death in the gutter, and goes and aids and helps him. And Yeshua speaks approvingly of this. In other words, Yeshua didn't give much of a damn about standing on the letter of the law. The man needed help. And Yeshua's take was, when you see somebody needing help, give help. Give aid. Right? Well, not according to Dick Land of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Called upon by my Savior to treat everyone humanely, but I'm also called upon to uphold biblical standards of morality.
You know, like, that man over there bleeding in the gutter is unclean. Let him die.
And the Bible, especially in the New Testament, is quite clear that homosexual behavior and lesbian behavior is a rebellion against God's order.
Is it? Because, see, you can read Matthew and Mark and Luke and most of John, really, although John kind of really doesn't count and never should have been in the New Testament to begin with. It should have been Thomas, not John. Because John's just kind of a second century CE hallucination. But there's nothing about morality codes and homosexuality
in Matthew, Mark, or Luke, or Thomas. And the parts that Dickland thinks are about homosexuality in, say, the letters of Paul, which are admittedly the oldest books in the New Testament, may not necessarily be about that at all. It may be about temple prostitution and such like, which actually kind of makes more sense than Paul getting all head up and bothered about the Homer sectionals, because homosexuality was openly condemned in the pagan cultures of Greece and Rome. A man as the paterfamilias, I'm the paterfamilias, a man as the paterfamilias could, in fact, kill a member of his family if he caught them in some sort of lesbian or homosexual act. Yeshua is silent on this. But, yeah, there you go. There you go. What's that? Lesbians and homosexuals are what?
Clear that homosexual behavior and lesbian behavior is a rebellion against God's order and perhaps the ultimate rebellion against God's creation is transgenderism. You know, I was born this way, but I don't want to be this way, so I'm going to change my gender. I don't know how you could have a more ultimate rebellion against God's creation and God's order than that.
Because God is apparently so shallow and juvenile that it gets all worked up about the genders that he created? Yeah, you see. You see. So, lo and behold, here we are at the close of the first hour of More in Monday. Note coming in from Michael in Madison. Paraphrasing Dickland here, speaking as a Christian, I'm called upon by my Savior to treat people humanely, but I'm also called upon to uphold biblical standards of morality. I love how this dude freely admits that the two things are in conflict, i.e. that biblical standards of morality are inhumane. Bingo. Thank you, Michael. Thank you. Marty says we really need to get you a couple of George Carlin's commentaries on religion. I've heard them. But we're not gonna I've heard them, and it's good. Yeah, Jay and I agree. Bob, tell those guys you announced at the beginning of today's More in Monday session, hockey pucks needed in abundance. Oh, I know. Oh, and Marty points out that there is, speaking of Denise D'Souza's America, imagine the world without her. There's a repig licking in Florida who wants to make viewing Denise's movie mandatory. I don't know who this cat is, but I remember seeing something about it. Mandatory in every school in Florida. Yeah, Marty, thank you for reminding me. He gets a dishonorable mention for this here More in Monday. And thanks go out to Jeremy. Who notes by message, I swear their fascination with one's bodily functions is without question more than they will ever admit, and I dare say there are more than a few secrets in every one of their closets.
Oh. There's something about Dick Land that just makes me, I don't know, I can't say I know it, but I deeply suspect it. That, well, you remember years ago when the pastor's wife went off to visit with family or something? Remember this guy was a minister at a Baptist church in Montgomery, Alabama? And by the time she got home, brother pastor minister was found self-asphyxiated while wearing two rubber suits with the dildos in both orifices, and pretty sure it wasn't murder. Yeah. No, there's something about Dick Land that makes me think that there's you know, maybe the little woman heads off to go and see her mama and her daddy, and maybe Dick Land spends Saturday night whistling "I Feel Pretty," if you know what I mean. So I agree with Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy, by the way, for taking Dr. John up on his Goodbye to July challenge. Pigs be flying, Bob. Another contribution coming in. Thank you. So, wow. We are only $15 away from meeting Dr. John's challenge. That's a very good thing. That's wonderful. Marty also pointing out, I wonder what happened to that thing I was taught that God loves and accepts us for whoever and whatever we are. Yeah, oh well. I know. Oh well. Not in Dickland, he doesn't. Haley pointing out via Twitter, Richard Land is a dick. That is all. You know what, Haley? That's enough. Right? By the way, oh, no, I'm going to save that for after the break. I'm going to save that for after the break. Because we got a lot of morons to deal with. Like them. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Right? So we'll take a break. Hopefully we'll finish off Dr. John's Goodbye July challenge and get started on the last $50 remaining for this evening's fundraising. And morons? Oh, we got morons. Oh, we so have morons. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid.
you refine the blood is not enough. Give blood, and there are some who say it's not enough. Give blood, but don't expect you ever see reward. Give blood.
Nine minutes past the hour, we begin hour number two on the horn this here Moran Monday. I'm Bob Kincaid, and there's plenty to talk about here. Little story out of, you know, almost level, West by God, Virginia. And it was over at Climate Progress, which generally does a pretty good job. Emily Atkin, the author of the story. In West Virginia congressional race, both candidates think climate change is not our problem. And this is a story about the second congressional district race in West Virginia, which encompasses everything from the Eastern Panhandle to Charleston, which is a long damn way away. It's not easy. It's actually a challenge to go from Charleston, West Virginia, the state capital, to Martinsburg, West Virginia, and do the whole thing, the whole trip, inside West Virginia. I mean, Texas, for instance, is a big state. And you can drive almost anywhere in Texas and never leave Texas. Hell, the same thing can be said for Iowa or Kansas. Most states. But not West Virginia, because after all, West Virginia is the only state in the Union whose outline is roughly in the shape of an obscene gesture. You ever met somebody from Michigan and you say, where are you from? And they'll hold up their hand and they'll point to somewhere in their palm, right? Well, if you ask somebody where they're from in West Virginia, we hold up our right hand in an obscene gesture and point to somewhere on our palm, because, you know, the middle finger's the northern panhandle and the thumb's the eastern panhandle. The second congressional district goes from over in the thumb to way in the hell down in the heel of palm. So Emily Atkin writes this piece at Climate Progress, thinkprogress.org/climate. In West Virginia congressional race, both candidates think climate change is not our problem. Now, why am I talking about this? And I generally think kindly of Think Progress. They do a lot of good work, and there's a lot of good. They do a good job covering a wide variety of stories. So why am I including them on Moran Monday? Here's why. Language moment. In West Virginia congressional race, both candidates think climate change is not our problem. A little show of hands, because, you know, it's like magic and I can see raised hands. A little show of hands for anybody who was listening last week. No, we did not lose Bob. Oh, for pity's sakes. But anyway, anybody who was listening last week who happened to hear, or it was, maybe it was, no, it was week before last, and heard my conversation with Ed Rabel. Ed Rabel just happens to be a candidate for the second congressional district seat being vacated by Shelley Moore Capito. So to use the word both indicates that there are only two candidates for their seat when for that seat when there are, in fact, three. And what is more, Ed Rabel holds a position that is exactly the polar opposite of climate change is not our problem. Which you will remember if you were privy to that conversation, right? Right. Let me check on something here. Someday we'll have a staff. Geez, hold on a minute. Oh, is it back? Okay, it's back. Let me check in the chat room, make sure. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that is weird. Let me do this then. If anyone will get to the bottom of this, it will be Ben Birch. Yeah, Lottie, that makes as much sense as anything. I think we may be in a temporal rift. Why not? Thanks very much, by the way, to Glenn. Glenn just jumped in on this evening's Goodbye July Dr. John Fundraising Challenge. We're now only $10 away from meeting that money doubling challenge. So 5 becomes 10, 10 becomes 20. Well, if $10 right now can turn into 20 if you want to take Dr. John up on his Goodbye July challenge. Thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy telling me the stream was a bit loopy for a few minutes. Seems to be back now. Good. I hate stressing out over that stuff. But stress I do. Anyway, I expect better of an outfit like Think Progress than to simply assume that because there's a Democrat and there's a Republican in a race that there is no other valid viewpoint or valid candidacy. Ed Rabel is not running in that race as a member of the Mountain Party. He's running as an independent. Here's what Emily Atkin writes. There are two major party candidates in the running. Well, I guess that gives us a bit of an out, doesn't it? Oh, they're major party candidates running in West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District seat in the U.S. House, and both of them think the issue of climate change is best left for other countries to deal with. This happening at a candidate forum this past Thursday, to which Ed Rabel was not invited. Let's see here. U.S. House candidates in West Virginia outline their positions. By the way, and here's the fun part that didn't get mentioned, this forum was moderated by the chairman of the West Virginia Business and Industry Council, a person by the name of Chris Hamilton, who is otherwise just known as a flack for the coal industry. Yeah, really. Paul Nyden at the Gazette writing, it wasn't really a debate. The candidates had seen the questions ahead of time, and they didn't take any other questions from the audience or each other. But the two major party candidates for the U.S. House seat in West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District, Democrat Nick Casey and Republican Alex Mooney, stood up in front of the West Virginia Business and Industry Council Thursday morning at the Charleston Civic Center. The two outlined their positions on issues including taxes, the federal debt, environmental regulations, funds for highways, and the Affordable Care Act. Along the way, Mooney, by the way, who is not from West Virginia, he's the former GOP head of the Maryland Senate. And Casey reminded the audience that Mooney has been, Mooney tried to tie Casey to Obama. Casey reminded the audience that Mooney's been in West Virginia for just a little more than a year, moving to, from Maryland after considering and deciding against a race for Congress in Maryland. Casey said he does not support House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and believes Congress has become ineffective. Attempts to tie me to Obama are not going to work, Casey said. Mooney, on the other hand, said, well, I'm proud to be a West Virginian by choice. Yeah, but the upshot of it all is that the EPA is evil, it's job-killing, and Mooney said he doesn't like the Clean Water Act, the EPA, and other regulations approved by Congress. Wolverines. Nick Casey said climate change is not our problem. It's an international issue. So, yeah, you get the idea. But the problem, and the Moran Monday nomination, comes from the fact that you can't even get a mention. One, Ed Rabel's not an is not an intellectual slouch by any standard, but he also would have really embarrassed the other two creatures of the coal industry had he been there. People might have looked at him and said, oh, my God, you mean there's somebody who thinks like me? I want that guy in the Congress, not the carpetbagger from Maryland or the tobacco industry lobbyist. So, think progress, climate progress. I like you guys. You're better than this kind of work. You're a lot better than this kind of work. And while we did start the program this evening with an idiot, the newbie, representing Cletus or Kurt Clausen from somewhere where people apparently are dropped on their heads daily in Florida. Yeah, that's Moran. And that was delight. That was fun, Moran. I like your country. Mm-hmm, I do. I love those Bollywood movies. I love all the yodeling. Well, this guy's not quite so funny. No, this guy's a jerk.
representing Mike Kelly from Repig-Lickin from Pennsylvania. He's all head up today about the, and we've discussed them, remember the EPA emissions regs regarding CO2 that do absolutely nothing to provide any relief to anyone in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone? Yeah, those regs. Representing Mike Kelly done got himself invited to talk to the Heritage Foundation. Yeah. And when you go to talk to the Heritage Foundation, you got to bring your A game crazy. And representing Mike Kelly done did. You talk about terrorism, you can do it in a lot of different ways, but you terrorize the people who supply everything this country needs to be great, and you keep them on the sidelines. My goodness, what have we become? When a government can level on you taxes and regulations that makes it impossible for you to compete, then you're going to stay on the sidelines. Really? Tons and tons and tons and tons of carbon dioxide poison aren't continuously pumped into the atmosphere, and they are, even under these EPA emissions regs, it's still pretty damn mild by comparison. Just limiting pollution that people have to breathe, limiting the CO2 that harms people downwind of coal-fired power plants, all of that constitutes terrorizing the people who supply everything this country needs to be great. He's talking about coal miners. So apparently, by analysis and extension, coal is everything this country needs to be great. Yeah. Don't need anything else, just coal. And among the things that we don't need in order to be great is apparently air we can breathe. Now, representing Mike Kelly also gave a statement in the House of Representatives on his Coal Country Protection Act. The Coal Country Protection Act will defend hardworking Americans from the EPA's extreme overreach by stopping unfair job-killing regulations in their tracks. The ideological ambitions of a few in Washington must never be allowed to force economic pain on families across our country. Pity's sakes. Public hearings on the EPA emissions regs begin tomorrow in Atlanta. Not Appalachia, Atlanta. By the way, and probably the centerpiece to nominating representing Mike Kelly as a member of our Moran Monday crew, this. Coal is a sustainable, reliable, and affordable energy source. Sustainable. Coal is sustainable. A finite resource that we're not making any more of. That isn't produced by little Keebler hillbilly elves down in the bowels of the earth. Coal is sustainable. Makes me crazy. All right, I'm kind of
So there you are. When you want for your family to be able to breathe clean air. You're a terrorist. Now, mind you, the people who set off 5.5 million pounds of high explosives per day in Appalachia, not terrorists. Just hard-working Americans. Very few of them, less than 4,000 in the state, or thereabouts. But me? Terrorist. Because I object to the host of diseases that science suggests may be connected to mountaintop removal. Okay, stand by. I'm going to see if I can get this squared away, and we'll find another more in afterward. Okay, we're going to soldier on under the understanding that I'm actually broadcasting. Getting notes here. Stream lost again. Thank you for letting me know, Marty. And oddly enough, in this particular instance, this time, I'm not blaming Chantel. So anyway, next moran. I'm pretty sure we can find one or a dozen. Who am I kidding? They've been lining up since Thursday. All right. Again, some of this probably feels a little bit like prayer meeting Wednesday, but the way things work around here, I think we'll still have... Now, this is just stupid. I mean, if there's... All right. Back up. So NBC4 out of New York is reporting a story of a story of infants with herpes, which all by itself is enough to make you sort of, right? But it's not a mystery. New York City health officials are not saying, oh my God, we've got a couple of newborns with herpes. How did a couple of newborns get herpes? Are the sterility fields not being maintained in the hospital? And is it Typhoid Mary only with herpes all over it? No, there's no question. Two infant boys. Were subjected to the Orthodox Jewish practice, ultra-Orthodox, I suppose I should say, really weird ultra-Orthodox practice. Okay, so little baby boys, and we've talked about this in the past, little baby boys... are often subjected, unwillingly, without consent, to having their newborn penises mutilated. It's called circumcision. It does all kinds of nasty, nasty, horrible things to a little boy.
but he can never really know what's been done to him because he lost all that nerve tissue before he ever got a chance to use it. And it's done in the non-religious world because of ginned up notions of hygiene. But you have to do it in the Jewish world because if you don't, God won't like you. Okay, so, all right. And you're going to, oh God, it's a horror to behold. So two little newborn Jewish boys in New York City didn't just have their penises ritually mutilated. They had it done in an ancient, ultra-Orthodox custom. And I'm probably mispronouncing this, but it's the Mitzitza B'Peh. And in that practice, the moil, who is the person, the lay person, who is not a physician, who is not a certified nurse practitioner, who is not a registered nurse or an LPN, or even a certified nursing assistant, or a physician's assistant, or anything remotely related to the medical community, ritually mutilates the little boy's penis. Okay. For purposes of this conversation, we're going to pretend that that's normal. But then in this ultra-Orthodox practice, the little boy's, at that time, bloody, bleeding, mutilated penis is then cleaned by having the moil put his mouth over the little baby's penis and suck away the blood. Which one presumes he then spits out in a bowl or something. Here on the 28th day of July, 2014, the second decade of the 21st freaking century, we have a Moran Monday story of two little newborn Jewish boy babies in New York City who have herpes because the moil had herpes when he went down to suck the blood off of the mutilated penis. Are we square with that? 'Cause I guess God must have wanted these two little boys to deal with herpes for the rest of their lives. Now remember, if you go to the Supreme Court of the United States and you're a Quaker and you say, I object to war and I don't want my tax dollars to be used to support war, the Supreme Court will tell you to not darken their doorway anymore, that you are by God going to pay your taxes even if you're a Quaker, and your Quaker money and your Mennonite money or whatever is going to be used to support war because America. On the other hand, not Congress, not the President, not the Supreme Court, and personally, I think, not God Almighty, if he actually existed, it could stop this practice. The only people who can stop this practice are the people who are doing this practice. Which is, by almost any metric whatsoever, really weird. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, you know, this brings new meaning to the phrase, biting off more than you can chew.
Oh, Ron, oh, Ron, oh, Ron, oh, Ron. You'll smoke a turd in hell for that one. Honestly. I mean, I know. Bronze Age religion. But you're... Then again, any conversation that tries to understand religious practices in rational terms is probably doomed to failure, right? And guess what? Even having a couple of little boys get herpes out of this process will not be enough to stop it. Because the other ultra-Orthodox parents will say, well, you know, that family just had the bad luck of getting the moyle with herpes. We'll get the good moyle. Mercy sakes. Yeah, exactly. M. Brandt in the chat room. More of those deeply held beliefs. Dear God, I hope there's not a corporation out there that wants all the little... Oh, God. Can you imagine the rats and that Kennedy guy on the Supreme Court ruling on this case? It is to shudder. Oh, by the way. Something on the order of 100 little boy children die in this country every year from complications resulting from infant male penile mutilation. And by the way, HSV-1, which is herpes simplex virus 1, type 1, which is what these little boys got for being born, it's a pain. In adults, you know, the oral lesions, the cold sores, the conversation you have with potential sexual partners. Yeah. But in a little, but in a baby, in a newborn, HSV-1 can bring on seizures and high fever. And even death. Now, granted, New York City has tried to deal with this problem. They passed there's an ordinance out there, which if it was challenged in court, you know how the rats and that Kennedy guy would rule. The New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene required Moyles to get written parental consent before they did the metzizah bepeh, the sucking off of the blood from the infant tormented penis. That's meaningless. There's only one way to do that, and that is to say, don't do this! Because it's barbaric. Because what ultra-Orthodox family is not going to sign the consent form? Wouldn't it have made more sense for the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene to require the Moyles to submit to testing to see if they have herpes or, you know, any other of a number of STDs? I'm sure that, well, never mind. Brian F. Lees is a research analyst at the Center for Evidence-Based Practice at the University of Pennsylvania Health System. He's been trying to research this, but he says,
we don't know how many times this practice is done, but he said, quote, there is sufficient clinical evidence to suggest the practice is a source of infection and therefore a risk exists, though the extent or magnitude of that risk is not well defined and warrants further investigation. You know what? I'd say two little boys with herpes from the practice is enough for a nation that's concerned about the well-being of its children to say, no, you can't do this anymore. Not saying you can't. Not saying, no, let's be clear. Not saying you can't ritually mutilate a little boy's genitals without his consent. You just can't do mouth-to-penis contact that can possibly transmit, herpes simplex virus 1. Man, that Bronze Age God, he's something. I mean, so it just beats all. Tim from L.A. with a question saying, Bob, isn't it funny that a religious practice called circumcision is practiced on non-Jewish folks because of some bullshit tale of health reasons? Yet bring up clitorectomy and there would be protests, and rightly so, around the world. Tim says, I don't know what it's like to have the pleasure of that comes with a complete penis, because my parents thought that circumcision was a procedure done to boys without painkillers to keep us clean. This is why I'm an atheist. Thank you, Tim. About 14 minutes before the hour, and we still have $10 to go to meet Dr. John's Goodbye July Moran Monday Challenge. Remember, if we get 50 bucks in, Dr. John doubles it and turns it into 100, meaning that we are two-thirds of the way to the fundraising necessary for any given day of broadcasting. Thank you, Dr. John, and thank you, Jeremy, and thank you, Criterion, and thank you, Cameron, and thank you, Sal. Thank you all very, very much for helping out this evening. Oh, you guys in the chat room. Lottie. Just take a little off the top. Meanwhile, by the way, I mentioned that I was over at the hospital today doing the pre-screening for when I'm going to deep throat the garden hose and get my gullet looked at. I mean, look, this is the only, I can't remember the name of the procedure. But I do know that the thing is going all the way down my throat, and I think that's the definition, but never mind. And I told you how in the surgeon's office they were running Fox News. Well, in the waiting room of the hospital where I was waiting to have an X-ray done on my neck, we were just going to take out a couple of, because it's, you know, gas to go over and back. It's not a short trip. And, see, at the hospital waiting room, they've got the Weather Channel on. And it's easier to deal with. But lo and behold, I was watching, what is it, Al Roker's America or Morning Weather with Al or something like that. And they cut to a close-up view. Oh, thanks, Devin. Thanks a freaking million. Great. Referring to my upcoming procedure, Devin says, hey, that's the same steel eel as they use on the other end. Straight out of Idiocracy. Here, put this thing in your ear, and this thing in your mouth, and this thing in your butt. No, wait, put this one in your ear, and this one in your mouth, and this one in your butt. Oh, I owe you big time, Devin. I owe you for the reminder. I'll put a little asterisk on the Christmas card list.
So anyway, I'm watching the Weather Channel there, waiting for my name to be called to go back and have my neck x-rayed. And I noticed that they've cut to a close-up of the radar map of the southeast. Now, the sound was turned down, so I had no idea what they were saying. But I did notice that Alabama was labeled as Mississippi, and Mississippi was labeled as Alabama. AL was on the state we recognize as Mississippi, and MS was on the state that we recognize as Alabama. And I just tweeted it briefly. I get all kinds of stuff just by walking around out in the ordinary world. It's a matter of how you look at things. let up, guys. So Devin says, yeah, that's the same steel eel as they use on the other end. And Lottie in the chat room says, yeah, smell it first. Stop it. Just quit. That's hateful. Ew. I guess that's why they dope you up with the Twilight sedation first. So you, huh? What? Weird. Smell it first. You guys. So anyway, I noticed that they're mislabeled. And to the rest of the country, you know, to California and Minnesota and Wisconsin and Massachusetts and New York and Pennsylvania and Illinois, Oregon, Washington, yeah, big deal. They've got Mississippi and Alabama interchanged. Who could tell the difference? Well, I'm here to tell you that anybody in Alabama who happened to be watching that segment, Marvelline! We ain't watching the Weather Channel no more. We'll get our weather from Fox. They done accused us of being Mississippi. Now, we got to put up with a lot of things in this here country, but that ain't one of them. We ain't watching the Weather Channel no more. Oh, hell no. This ain't Mississippi, this Alabama. And I was thinking about that when I ran across this story in the course of Moran Monday prep. So, down in Alabama Stan, which is not Mississippi. No, because Mississippi has Pappy McDaniel running around with his boys taking pictures of old ladies with Alzheimer's disease in nursing home beds. That Mississippi. So down in Walsboro, Alabama, they had themselves, and this goes back, it's a little bit old, but it's an oldie but a goodie. Back in 2012, the League of the South had their national conference in Walsboro, Alabama, and I was born and raised in Alabama, and I have no idea where Walsboro is. So that should say something. But you just gotta, Warren Throckmorton is a psychology professor at Grove City College. And he's the one who gets credit for finding what you're about to hear. The individual in question you're going to hear is Marilyn Repiglican, Michael Perutka. Well, he talked for, he gave a speech for a sure enough hour. And then this. No, really, this.
What we teach in Institute on the Constitution.
I want to make sure we get all of it. Here we go. Now, this guy is a candidate. Actually, he's the Maryland Republican nominee for Anne Arundel County Council. Okay? He's not running as some sort of fringe party. He is a Republican, by God. A genuine birther, deather, tenther, booger-eater Republican. Here we go. Need I remind you, hockey puck, duct tape.
So the presuppositions of American law and government are really what we teach in Institute on the Constitution, because we need to reinvigorate the culture with this understanding and return to it. Whether that takes the place of reform, which Dr. Hill has said is very unlikely or impossible, but whether it does or not, even if you secede, then what are you going to do? You need to secede, and then you need to have the biblical understanding of law and government and make the applications. So we still need.
Which makes me wonder. He wants a biblical understanding of law and government. Does that mean all the little boys have to run the risk of getting herpes by getting the blood sucked off of their, because that's biblical, right? Biblical law and government, baby.
To take the biblical view of law and government into account, whether no matter what the outcome is with respect to the crumbling of the current regime. You're going to need to take a biblical worldview and apply it to civil law and government. That's what you're still going to need to do. We're going to have this this foundational information in the hearts and minds of the people, or else liberty won't survive the secession either. You see what I'm saying? So this view, I'm saying that because I don't want people from League of the South to for one minute think that I'm about reforming the current regime, and studying the Constitution is about informing the regime. I, like many of you, and like Patrick Henry, probably have come to the conclusion that we smelled the rat from the beginning. Okay. However, we believe that it is essential to take a biblical view of law and government, and then make those applications. So,
no, really, okay. So he gets out his guitar, Michael Perutka does. And he's going to lead this gathering in Walsboro, Alabama, of the League of the South. He's going to lead them in the national anthem. Okay? And lead them in the national anthem. You got the duct tape? You got the hockey puck? You didn't take it out, did you? All that mumbo jumbo about... No, he's a real secessionist. He is a sure enough secessionist. Again, and you can always tell I'm frustrated when I start something out with, in the year 2014, the second decade of the 21st century of the common era, we in the United States of America still have secessionists. Hint, we have a lot of secessionists. More than you know. More, perhaps, than you suspect. So now that he has told them all about how you got to have a biblical government, in other words, how a seceded confederacy or whatever it would be would have to be a theocracy. I mean, this guy's a mullah. Okay, that's probably not fair. I don't want to disparage. You know, when I talk about circumcision, I'm not disparaging Judaism. I'm criticizing a barbaric remnant practice within it. Kind of like criticizing the utterly hopeless and foolish and downright silly idea of priestly chastity and in the Roman Catholic Church, right? It's not a blanket condemnation. I was about to say he's a mullah in every sense of the word, save for the headgear. Let us simply say, and that's why I said, I apologize for that.
This guy is a theocrat. This guy wants, and he's certainly no Muslim, because he wants a biblical government with all the laws of the Old Testament. That probably means he's a Christian Reconstructionist, if you get right down to it. I know you know what Christian Reconstruction is. So now it's national anthem time at the 2012 meeting of the League of the South. And this is only relevant because this guy is a candidate in 2014 under the banner of the Republican Party in the state of Maryland. Now, the GOP candidate for county executive, who is a man by the name of Steve Hsu, according to the Raw Story. Steve Hsu, whose friends may or may not call him Steve Really Big Hsu. Sorry, that's a really dated joke. Says that he's contacted Mr. Perutka and asked him to cut ties with the League of the South because I do believe the organization could be considered racist, according to Hsu. He has assured me that he is not a racist and that he believes in the equality of all members of the human family. He has further assured me that he does not believe in secession of any portion of our country. So in other words, Steve Hsu asked, and Perutka said, screw you, I'm staying in the League of the South, but I'm not a racist, and I don't believe in secession, even though I was up there giving a speech about secession and wanting biblical worldviews to run the government. And even though I led them in what I called the national anthem, which is...
Yeah, the national anthem. Wish I was in the land of cotton, the wool comes there, but not forgotten the way. Away,
you hear all that clapping? You hear all that hooting and hollering? Yeah, I did too. Did you hear anybody laughing? Ha, 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 ha! What a brilliant piece of satire that was! Oh, ho, 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 ho! I sure do love me some parody! Me neither. But remember, Michael Perutka, running for county commission in Anne Arundel County, is not a racist and not a secessionist, even if he goes to the meetings and refers to Dixie, the anthem of the South in the Civil freaking War, as the national anthem. Devin with a plea. Stop, Bob, stop. Stop shoving pine cones in my ears. That hurts. It's an open question as to what hurts more, the big full-size spread-out pine cones or the little tiny hemlock pine cones that'll actually fit down in the ear canal. Meanwhile, just in case you thought that that was some sort of outlier, that nothing,
just in case you think that that guy was, I mean, you know, he's not like the, I mean, the good Republicans are not like that. Well, let's check in with the House of Representatives and a little hearing they had last week regarding the Bureau of Land Management and Cloven Bundy. You remember Cloven?
Let me tell you a thing or two about the Negro.
Yeah, that Cloven. We have here as a Moran nominee, representing Tom McClintock, a pig licking from California. Now, representing Tom McClintock of California says he knows how to prevent future problems between the Bureau of Land Management and mooching scofflaws like Cloven Bundy, who wants to tell you a thing or two about the Negro. Do tell, representing McClintock. This is going to be fun. This is the Natural Resources Committee. Oh, no, no, no. We're not going to run that. We'll just go with the quotes. Representing McClintock. Wasn't that a John Wayne movie? Whether Bundy was right or wrong, was the BLM's response reasonable? Anyone watching that... Anyone watching that unfolding fiasco can answer it was completely insane. Yeah. He went on to call for disarming agents of the Bureau of Land Management. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He did. He really, really did. One of the witnesses called to testify was Garfield County, Utah Commissioner Leland Pollock, who told the Republican-dominated House of Representatives Natural Resources Committee, right or wrong, some, there's that Fox-style manual at work again, some, not going to say who, can't say who, because they all live inside my little noggin. I'm using the word some to mean I, but I'm not going to admit to that because I might have to answer questions. Right or wrong, some equate BLM's law enforcement operations to the Gestapo of the World War II era. See, I guess Garfield County, Utah Commissioner Leland Pollock has learned a little bit about Godwin's Law. So he was trying to be kind of polite there, seeing how he was talking to the House of Representatives and didn't say the Nazi word. The Gestapo of the World War II era. That is to say, everyone in the World War II era had a Gestapo. American Gestapo, German Gestapo, Japanese Gestapo, English Gestapo, Aussie Gestapo. Oh, okay, I get it. Thank you, Ron. Ron making it all clear now. With regard to Mr. Perutka. Now, there you go, Bob. That feller was white, and he was old-timey. Yee-haw! He was old-timey. That's all you need. Now, it was the Cloven Bundy supporters who proudly took pictures of snipers putting the crosshairs
on representatives of we the people who are out there every day working on forming that more perfect union, but it was the Bureau of Land Management who some say were behaving like the Gestapo of the World War II era. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then there's representing Chris Stewart, a Republican from Utah, who is probably how Leland Pollock got on the witness panel. Representing Chris Stewart, Republican of Utah, said, Utah Stan, I'm sorry, I have observed more and more the level of militarization occurring within many federal agencies, and I mean almost every federal agency. I'm not sure having these teams scattered across dozens of agencies is the most efficient use of resources. It's heavy-handed and intimidating to the American people. Then we get back to representing McClintock. Local law enforcement knew the circumstances, knew the people involved, and would exercise much better judgment 9 times out of 10. So I ask once again, why are we arming land managers? Wait, I thought these Republicans were all for everybody having a gun. Oh, wait. Except the people who freaking need them, because the cloven Bundys and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the baggers and the booger eaters are out there with guns. Finally, they let Representative Raul Grijalva, a personal hero of mine in this Congress, speak. He said, we saw some isolated pictures of heavy-handed law enforcement, but there are also very graphic pictures of militia folks supporting Bundy on the highway pointing weapons at U.S. Marshals. If that's the level of rhetoric, I think both sides should be very cautious. See, that's because Representative Grijalva, who, by the way, is a proud co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the AHEC Act, H.R. 526. Well, that's because he doesn't want shootouts between weirdo right-wingers and the government. And so he would prefer to be very cautious, in his words. The other side, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, and booger eaters, they don't want to be cautious. They want a civil war. They want to get up every morning with Michael Perutka and sing the national anthem and have the national anthem be goddamn Dixie. How hard is this to comprehend? How much more evidence do we need? Yeah, that's true, Sparky. Paint chip eaters, too. Lead. Tasty. Let's take a little break, and maybe during the little break, we'll take a call. The lines are open, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And maybe the last $10 of Dr. John's Goodbye July Challenge will come in, too. This is Conversation Radio. After all, conversation is more than welcome here. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where the PayPal button is. That's where the chat room is, too. You're more than welcome to pop on in and enjoy the conversation. We've got a great group in there this evening. Good evening, 11 Messiah. Good evening, Devin and Jay Cruzen and Jug of Punch and M. Brant and Mr. Gibson and Richard and Sentient Being and Sergi and Stockton Larry and Tim and Waggy and, of course, our inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky.
Good evening, one and all. So, yeah, a quick break, and then off to the phones. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This isn't Alabama. Oh, how well I know. I'm in central Germany, where I love to go. Then how come I am seeing right in front of me? My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. My Lord, there flies a rebel flag in central Germany. Mercy. Riding peaceful on this train, enjoying the scenery and mellowing my brain. Then stuck atop a pretty barn, there for all to see. The omnipresent rebel flag in central Germany. A massive Confederate flag in
Jason Ringenberg. From the album from about, 10 years or so back, Empire Builders. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. That's where you go to get into the chat room to find the pop-up player. And when we have stories to post, we post them there. And it's also the home of the PayPal button. And thank you. Thank you very much, Asa. Asa has finished off Dr. John's Goodbye July Moran Monday Challenge, which means that we are now only $50 away from meeting the evening's fundraising goal. Thank you. Thank you, Asa. It means a very great deal. Let's go to the phones. I suspect we have Bill with us. Hey, Bill. Oh, Bill.
Hello.
Oh, no, that's Edward. Okay.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, I just want to let you know, two of the fertilizer companies are now blaming the city of West for the explosion.
Really?
Yeah. How about that?
Is it West's fault because West had the
audacity, the temerity to place a charming little little Czech community in the middle of the hill country? Is that what it is?
I have no idea. It was just a blurb I saw on the news, and that's all I've heard about it.
Well, we'll have to check that out. I had no idea that West was maybe it was West terrorists.
Well, could be. But also, I saw something else most frightening. Sarah Palin has going to have a channel on television or something.
Yeah, her very own.
Yeah, her very own. And I saw her. She walked up on the stage, and all these posters behind her said, she, which reminded me of an old movie. It was a book first. The title of the book is She. The first movie was Silent. It was made in the 1920s. And the second movie was made in 1932 and starring Helen Zahagan Douglas, Melvin Douglas's wife, who was trashed by Richard Nixon when she was running for Congress. And then there was another one in the 60s or 70s starring Ursula Andress. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. But that's what we called her.
Yes,
she was a beautiful woman.
Yeah,
her name was Ursula
Andress. Yeah.
Andress.
Yeah.
I'm bad. Anyway, it was a story of this woman who was eternal and bathed in a flame that made her eternal, and she was over 2,000 years old, and she was referred to as she who must be obeyed. And did you ever watch Rumpole of the Bailey?
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, well, he referred to his wife always as
she who must be obeyed. And there have been a couple of women in my life who have become referred to as she whose name shall never again be mentioned. But yeah.
Well, anyway, I thought, my God, does that mean that Sharon Palin is bathing in a sacred flame, and we're going to have to put up with her for the next 2,000 years?
Wait. So we're going from drill baby drill to burn baby burn?
I guess so. I'm sorry.
No, that's Edward, you are ever a delight.
You all take care. Have a good evening.
All right, I'm going to try. You be good.
Thank you,
Bye-bye. Edward.
Bye
now. And now I suspect. Hold on. I screwed up the phone system. I have no idea how to unhold a call on Skype. Mr. Stress, if you want to call back, you are more than welcome to. Edward mentioned the Caribou Barbie channel. And the Twitter sphere is having an absolute delight with it, suggesting possible show titles for the Sarah Palin She channel. Under the hashtag Palin TV shows, we have things like My Three Guns, my personal favorite from Liz Winstead, because she's really funny, Back Alley McBeal. David Korn suggested I Love Lucy But Deport Ricky. Really Easy Jeopardy. Mama Grizzly Adams Family Values. That's a double bonus for working in two programs. Death Panels, she wrote. The Sorest Loser. The Weakest Wink. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood Watch. Meet the Press, never. Sarah the Vocabulary Slayer. say yes to the Confederate flag dress. Camo is the new black. Unmarried with children. Saved by the bell curve. American Idol, IDLE. Or just Fox News. Tom Baggioni over at Raw Story has that listing. Death panel, she wrote, announcement of Palin's channel brings out the snark on Twitter. Oh, golly, let's go back to the phones. Now we've got Mr. Stress. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, you?
Surviving. Yeah, you're kind of on the money tonight. I thought of one thing. There was a group, English war designation, one armored regiment. It was like a 7th RTR Royal Tank Regiment. No, I should think it was Room Temperature Republican, you know, with some...
You'll be here all
along the line. Well, we got to start somewhere. By the way, Bob, you little book I'm working on now follows the three royals in England, in Germany before, or in Europe before World War One, and pretty interesting stuff. They were all cousins, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
King of England, cousins.
Yeah, 10 million people. 10 million people died in a family squabble.
Yeah, I didn't know Queen Victoria's lineage could produce such idiots. As, you know, but oh well, I can't do it. You can't do it. But that keeps happening. So I got involved in that one, and you know, the old story. But, you know, another thing I recommend to people, you ever hear of a guy named Studs Terkel?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, because I recommend people try to find his Division Street America and USA or whatever. He wrote about three things where he went around interviewing people and getting opinions. And, you know, I look back at it now, I think, man, that thing was prophet-like. It's the way things were going to go, you know. But I won't keep you. I mean, there's not so much going on that I just don't know anymore.
Isn't this the anniversary of the actual first shots of the actual war being fired 100 years ago?
You mean 1914?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were hard at it. By August, so a good starting now, and it's just the Austria-Hungary was like, it was unbelievable, Bob. I mean, it was at the end of the road. I mean, it was just the Kaiserwick and Kaiserwick was a thing they call the army Kaiserwick and something like. Was a pronunciation. Actually, I'm not Austrian. You know, I don't speak it. But and they got those guys up in the Carpathians. It was unreal. They had no equipment and up in the mountains of colder than a witch's kiss. And this country was so Austria was so backward. But at the same time, we're sort of saying that. Nothing was ever serious because of the attitude of the, you know, the Danubian Wall Society, you know, which is all based on nothing. And but you got me going with the Dixie. I could think of was the rally around the flag, you know, which was actually sung a lot more by the Union troops than the Battle of the Republic was. John Brown's body was big, you know. Everybody liked that one. It was easy to remember, you know. That's how things are. But anyway, I'll let you go. It's just, these things, Bob, it's like you're sitting there and you're watching one of those, remember the old movies where they had a wheel and the scenery kept repeating itself, going faster real quick.
Oh, yeah.
And the old movies, yeah. This is what I see going on now. Dinesh is the correct pronunciation, which I think his old man was either a loader or had a bad set of teeth. I'm not sure which. To hang that neck on somebody. Anyway, I'll let you go and stay out of trouble.
I'm going to try, Bill.
Take care.
There's no guarantees, yeah. But I'm going to try.
Well, yeah, you got to go. Well, I remember going in when I was 32. It's a real scar tissue on your vocal cords, and you may have throat cancer and blah, blah, blah. 32, my God, that was quite a few years ago, and it never materialized. But a lot of times the throat specialist in those days had to have a ticket to get you in the hospital and charge more for the whole thing. That was a problem. That was my first wife was an RN, and she ended up in the administrative end of it.
My guy's just a garden variety osteopath who's passed a board certification in surgery. So,
the trouble you're having is unfortunately more common than it should be. I don't know whether it's the diet or the stuff we're eating, or if I could do that, I'd be a doctor. You know,
right?
If I could diagnose, but. I just sometimes wonder about just the actual quality of the stuff we're getting. And as they start selling out the producers of food, like the one pork producing company, of course, Mr. Bush, didn't he fire a whole bunch of the food inspectors?
Yeah, and the Obama administration has sort of carried on that sordid practice.
Yep.
You might recall the story about the chicken inspectors from earlier this year, where a pilot program that failed everywhere it was tried, it was due to be enshrined in law. You know the kind of inspection program where the chicken plant does its own inspections.
Well, we had a professor at Cleveland State who was a psychologist, but I'm talking 30 years ago, he was talking about the use of arsenic in young chickens because that brought them to market size faster. And I don't know about you, but I always thought that arsenic wasn't too good for you.
Maybe
I missed something.
I seem to recall a certain famous play, you know, Arsenic and Old Lace.
Yeah. Well, one of Hamlet's short stories, they caught one guy trying to use arsenic to commit a murder with. I tell you, buddy, you got to go out and get the big knockover, and because most of the continental hop stuff is Red Harvest and the Dane Curse, and wasn't there one more? Yeah. But his short stories were amazingly sociologically, historically correct. Sending the Continental Op to the border was, Arizona was not a state yet. But people were running the border in those days like it was nothing. And a dead yellow woman, which takes place around San Francisco, where there was a rich young Chinese lady whose house was being used to run people in from that part of the world. And, of course, here's the thing about all this. What they don't want to talk about is when these people get in here, and these people that are crying about it the most are the ones that are putting money in, giving them jobs and putting money, you know, low-paying jobs and putting money in their pockets. And they're screaming about illegal border crossers. And as I said, I just found my passport the other day because I never had to use one when I went to Canada, but now you do. It's one of those things.
We brought that on ourselves.
Yep. Well, that 9/11 stuff really twisted. Some folks really turned that around to their benefit.
Yeah, sadly.
It's funny with the Arab-Israeli thing. My first wife's sister was trained as a nurse and a doctor in Israel, and she came back to Cleveland. She said it was getting pretty rough over the But the bottom line is, after the 67 war, that's when the big spread started. And of course, who was leading the settlers are the most hardcore, ultra-conservative types who are going in and grabbing every piece of land they can get their hands on. Because believe me, when you look at the thing, the whole history, the whole mess, there's been plenty of nastiness on both sides of the line, you know? But, and as I say, who was it, Sparky, that clued me that what I heard about the 74 war?
Yeah, that was Sparky.
I was put on alert. I woke up to that, and I never heard it again. So I said, man, you better watch what you're drinking at night, though. You wake up to that kind of news, you know? As I said, I went through that 62 thing, and that did a lot to you when you're 18 or 19 years old. And, I mean, who was the firebomber of Japan, LeMay? Oh, he couldn't get wait to get cranked up and invade Cuba, you know?
Oh, no kidding.
Somehow, somewhere along the line, somebody put their feet down, and we never came to what could have been one hell of a mess. It's like the thing now with the Ukraine. I don't know whether those guys shot that plane down or not, or how the hell were they given that kind of equipment? That's all I want to say if the Soviet people leaders gave these clowns this kind of sophisticated equipment, somebody ought to go upside their head real fast. Because you want to turn the world opinion against you, do stuff like that. And he'll do it in a hurry. Because, I don't know, I have friends that are Ukrainian young men, and we've talked. Well, I'll tell you one thing, being a hockey fan, you know how many Ukrainians because the name is sometimes very easy to spot. Sawchuk, Andrichuk, Kindrichuk. Yeah, these are all NFL players and NHL players in my lifetime, you know, so. And yeah, I think the Canadian government clamped down on the Ukrainians in the World War I era. I say things like that because I look at the Horn people and the group and I say, well, if they want to back check if they can do it and see if I was right or not. Like, I was wrong about Bismarck. I had been led to believe that he was in favor of higher labor payments to laborers in Germany, but it seems that he wasn't. Wherever I got that story was from off base.
He ushered in the beginnings of what would become the German social safety net as a means of forestalling revolution. Workers' compensation, for instance, comes in. And see, most people, Bill, don't know that workers' compensation and it has its origins in the late 1800s, early 1900s in the United States. Workers' compensation was not some sort of generous act of mercy toward American workers, or any worker for that matter, because before the era of workers' compensation came in, if you got hurt on the job, you had a right to sue your employer. And so what workers' compensation did is said, we're going to take away the right of a worker to sue his employer, and in exchange for that, we're going to provide compensation for injuries in which there's a limited amount of stuff that has to be proven. And then once the system was in place, they began crafting all kinds of exclusions and exceptions and defenses. For instance, the fellow servant rule that said, okay, well, you were hurt on the job, but you were injured by a fellow servant, too bad. And then they tried to start, because, see, initially it was not, the trade-off was you give up your right to sue as a worker, and the management side gives up its right to claim things like contributory negligence and the kind of things that barred recovery.
Yeah. Well, there's one that Mike, the attorney, Cap Antonio. Man,
yeah.
I like listening to him because he's got a nastier mouth than I do, and a lot more knowledge to back it up. Because that's been an issue for years. lawsuits and workers. You know, you have to realize, you know how bad coal mining was. Well, if anybody thinks working in a steel mill and being dropped into molten steel is any nicer, it's just quicker.
Well, at one point in time, steel workers were working a 96-hour work week, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, one day off for church, where they would go and be told not to organize and not to rise up and to be glad that God gave them a job that they could work at 12 hours a day, 96 hours a week, for pittance wages in the steel mill.
Well, the railroad workers, brakemen, switchmen, I had a cousin and his kid that were working on the railroad lines that fed in and out of the steel mills. And, man, that was nasty work, too. You know, people falling off of those trains left and right, and, that kind of manual labor can be extremely dangerous, and it was. And I say I have a little bit of an attitude about the Bakersfield singers who have forgotten how they ended up or why they ended up in Bakersfield. Buying that beat-up car and, you know, Grapes of Wrath situation.
Right, yeah.
Driving across country. Anyway, I'll let you go, my friend, and hang in there.
All right, you take care, Bill. We'll talk soon.
Good night.
All right, bye now. And that, of course, is Bill, Mr. Stress, our buddy, calling from Cleveland, the one and only, the legendary bluesman that he is. About 19 minutes before the hour. Let's see, Moran? Is this guy a Moran? This guy's a Moran. And we have to go back to Alabamistan for this. The charge in the case is manslaughter, so you know it's not going to be a happy subject. The subject of the story is Raphael Quinney of Mobile, Alabama, a place near and dear to my heart. Well, it was, according to the Mobile Press Register, the local paper down there, Raphael Quinney, back on July the 14th, was jumping on a trampoline, okay? Raphael Quinney was jumping on a trampoline alongside Selena Edwards. Raphael Quinney and Selena Edwards had a lovely little daughter. And they were all jumping on the trampoline together. You know, family values time. Unfortunately, Raphael Quinney was jumping on the trampoline in conjunction with a freedom protector. Ugh. At some point in time, and stories that begin, there was a round in the chamber and he didn't know it, seldom end well. I have some personal knowledge of that. Jackie Quinney, who is some relation to Raphael, said, "I believe this really was a misunderstanding and a bad accident. I know they were playing over the gun, and he did not know the bullet was still in the chamber. Because what happened was Selena Edwards she got shot and killed while they were bouncing up and down on the trampoline while Raphael Quinney had a gun. So Raphael Quinney is going to go off to the big house because Raphael Quinney is not the right shade of skin tone to mount any sort of credible defense in Alabama. Selena Edwards is dead, and somebody's going to have to raise the baby. Wolverines on trampolines! Damn. freedom, right? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time by the blood of people playing with their infant on trampolines. It is its natural manure. Sure. Right, right, Stockton Larry in the chat room. But Bob, haven't you heard? First they came for our trampolines, and I said nothing because I did not have a trampoline. Yeah. All right, one more thing. And this is a language thing, and it's equal opportunity. I woke up this morning, and I saw one story, and I commented on it on my Facebook page. And then, as if by virtue of the goddess of irony, balance were to be provided, there it is. This comes from BuzzFeed. So, Scott Brown, former Playgirl centerfold model and former short-term senator from the state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is now running for senator against Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire. A while back, the Scott Brown campaign put out a press release, contact Elizabeth Guyton, for immediate release, July 9th, 2014. Brown campaign announces Nashua supporters list, lists names nearly 100 former and current elected officials, activists, and supporters formerly backing Scott Brown. As Scott Brown's grassroots support continues to grow, the Brown campaign today announced nearly 100 supporters from the city of Nashua, made up of elected officials, activists, and supporters. Our team is working hard every day to unite Republicans and like-minded supporters who are fed up with the Obama-Shaheen agenda and ready for real leadership in Washington, said Scott Brown. The city of Nashua will be critical in this election, and we are grateful to unroll such a strong list of dedicated supporters as we continue building our team and spreading our message across the state. And here goes the list, you know. Jeff Foster, Nancy Foster, Sheila Galligan, Scott O'Bear, Chuck Redonis, Brian LaFrance, Barbara Clark, Jackie Marteau. Okay, none of these people are relevant. Then you get down and you see Charles Benzing. Charles Benzing is an activist. He became noteworthy for his effort as a bus driver to break a bus driver union. Because, I mean, that establishes your pig-licking bona fides, right? Well, look, I get tons of emails, especially from the Shelley Moore Capito campaign, and sometimes you wind up on lists that you don't want to be on, and if you just hit the unsubscribe, it generally works. Me, I like to watch these little freaks in action, so I stay on the list just to read them. Oh, God, I've got a Natalie Tennant Moran story, and I'm not going to have time for it. We'll have to maybe save her for Titanic Tuesday. So anyway, Charles C. Benzing received a solicitation for a political donation from some Democrats in New Hampshire. Charles Benzing replied, "I deeply resent your email to me requesting my support for the fascist CUNTS you represent. These four whores have been and will continue to be wrapped up in their fantasies of sucking NIGGER/SPIC cock and licking NIGGER/SPIC assholes and not doing what is important for the country and their fellow citizens. I sincerely hope I have offended your PC sensibilities. Your fascist ideology demands it." In my opinion, law is a whore, and you and your Democrat fascist party are its pimps. You and your cohorts are a despicable assemblage of government nipple suckers intent on destroying America for your own personal gain. I have no idea how you got my email address, but take my name off your list immediately. It sickens me that you've used it once. So BuzzFeed reached out and tried to find a phone number for Charles C. Benzing, and they did, and they called it, and they said, did you write that? And he said, the one about them being a bunch of fascists? Yeah, that's me. No, the one about them, oh, dear. And so it's been verified. It's real. Meanwhile, and this is not because I'm some sort of delicate soul who can't stand to use bad language. I've used plenty of it. But I am the son of one female, the grandson of two others, the husband of a female, and the father of three more females. In that regard, I have tried, and I'm not touting anything, but I'm making an effort to check myself as often as possible for male privilege and to try to get some of the misogyny out of my language. I'm also the father to a son, and I'm trying to get it out of his because the language of the culture in which he runs is rife with it. And it's offensive. It's nasty. And I can't imagine there are a lot of women out there who like to be referred to by words like Mr. Benzing was using. And then, of course, there are the racial epithets as well, equally obnoxious. But the problem is that this is not a problem that is limited to the right wing as much as I wish it was. It is also in common currency on what we generally define as our side. To wit, what I saw earlier this morning. I don't know how it turned out to be a news story, but I saw a news story on Facebook saying that Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks, nice guy, like him, met him, yeah, does good work. But he took off on a rant on Sean Hannity, who is loathsome and odious, who is a jackass at the very least, certainly a moron who has been grandfathered out of Moran Monday, because if we didn't, Moran Monday would just be Sean Hannity Monday. But in the course of declaring his disdain for Sean Hannity, and in the course of declaring what a coward he thinks Sean Hannity is, and I agree, Cenk Uygur referred to Sean Hannity with an epithet referring to female genitalia. It was not the same epithet used by Charles Benzing, although it is a synonym of same. The word often appears in front of the word cat. Generally speaking, liberals and progressives are orders of magnitude more intelligent than right-wingers. I expect language like what we witnessed from Charles C. Benzing. I expect it. Those people, Yes, and I'm deliberately using that phrase. Those people are that way. Misogyny is part and parcel of the Republican culture of life. But, and this is the third time I've used this reference in this evening, it is the 28th day of July, 2014, the second decade of the 21st century, and can we not come to an agreement that if we must use derisive language in regard to some misbegotten right-winger, that there are better ways of doing so than to call the other person a portion of female anatomy? Female genital anatomy. Because, for starters, it objectifies women. It reduces women only to their constituent parts, which is wrong. Secondly, it manifests a certain want of basic vocabulary skills. I do not like it, but I am not surprised when I hear such language used by the people of my son's and daughter's generation, at least around here. I constantly try to correct and offer guidance. I suggest other equally mocking words. But really, and I'm not the language police, if there's a credible argument to be made for continuing to use the denigration of portions of female anatomy, particularly the genitals, in making negative references to someone else, by all means, let me know. We can have that discussion. But until a compelling argument comes forward for continuing to disparage women via the invective that we choose to use on men, I'm going to suggest that we excise those insults from our vocabulary. Because I think we can do better. In point of fact, I think we are. Just a little food for thought as we round out this year More In Monday. And round it out we shall. Thank you very much to everyone who contributed to Meet Dr. John's Goodbye July More In Monday Challenge. We will begin the program tomorrow evening in a $50 hole. We'll have $200 to raise tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday. Of course, if someone hears this between now and then, wants to take over $50, that's great. Thank you, one and all. That's how we keep this going. And so, I will encourage you to join us. Let's all get together tomorrow evening. And please check out Dr. Bill. He's doing magnificent work. He took the axe handle out today and took the teabaggers out behind the barn. Horst caught that early on. The podcast is available at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for Dr. Bill. Thank you to all of you for everything that you do to keep this going, and thank you for all of your participation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina.
It's all for you.